Good morning and welcome to Shattering This. This program is devoted to the most important and to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed, that they do not deserve your support or loyalty. Our mission is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they are doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to continue to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, which means teaching, not law. Because it's liberating, it's enriching, and it's empowering covenant, provides the only reliable answer for you and for your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, 877-300-7645. There were two things mentioned in the SRN News Minute that I would like to address. The first of those is the idiocy of the President of the United States, his failure to lead, his lack of a moral compass. He said that he was going to prioritize sexual assault, especially on college campuses. Well, as the commander-in-chief of the world's largest armed forces, that's extraordinarily inappropriate. The place where sexual assault is rampant, the place where women are vastly more susceptible to being sexually assaulted than any other place in the Western world. I mean, probably second only to the Islamic war zones in places like Syria is the U.S. military. Sexual assault is absolutely out of control. The majority of women who participate, either as employees or as officers or as enlisted personnel in the U.S. military, are not only sexually assaulted, and usually by senior officers, but then they're raped by their government, who attacks them, who slanders them, who abuses them, as opposed to holding the perpetrators accountable. It's about 1% of rapists in the U.S. military that are actually convicted. 99% go free. And that's why rape in that culture is out of control. We have a problem. The problem is gargantuan. And it is growing exponentially. And yet, this man wants to look at college campuses. The issue on college campuses, by the way, is predominantly related to drinking, alcohol consumption. And something changed in America. I don't know if it was bred by Title IX, which I think is a gargantuan mistake, which has disrupted the entire nature of society. Or it's by just the social engineering that's been perpetrated on society. But women have become as decadent as most men. There once was a time where men were more likely to drink than women. That's no longer the case. That men were more likely to get drunk than women. That's no longer the case. That men were more willing to pursue meaningless sexual encounters than women. That's no longer true. It's what we've done to ourselves through the immoral indoctrination of political correctness and the promotion of less than admirable sexual alternatives that has so polluted the culture of young people in this country that they make horrible choices. They bring harm upon themselves. Now, that is not the case in the military. The military is a deliberate and purposeful environment that's designed to encourage this kind of abuse. And they want no one to interfere with their jurisprudence so that it can be remedied. The second story that was brought up, the SRN spokesperson missed the issue that was actually relevant. Who would have thought that a time would come when those America claims are its enemies, that those that America claims are villainous are actually telling the truth when they claim that the United States is arming the most ruthless Islamic terrorists? But it's true. In Montreux, Switzerland, Syria's government, this article from Reuters reads, set a bitter tone Wednesday. No, they didn't set a bitter tone. They told the truth. The truth isn't popular. The truth very seldom is popular. The Syrian regime is despicable. But they told the truth. And the truth is more revolting in this case than the regime itself. Its opening talks at this conference, of course, are meant to end the country's long and bloody civil war. This is a war that cannot be ended with one side arming the other, part of the world arming one side, the other part of the world arming the other. This is a civil war that can't be ended with diplomacy. It is a civil war that is being fought on religious grounds. The Syrian government began by accusing its Islamic neighbors, Sunni neighbors, of sowing terrorism and insurrection, while at the same time dismissing intruders such as the United States and other Western backers of the Syrian rebels. You know, it's a profound statement. It is the Sunni Arab countries surrounding Syria that have armed the conflict, that have turned a peaceful revolt, peaceful protest into a civil war. Those countries are led by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, but also Turkey, Kuwait, all providing weapons to the Sunni jihadists, who are, by any standard, terrorists. And they're not supplying their own weapons. Saudi Arabia is not a manufacturer of sophisticated weapons, nor is Qatar. They're sending in American weapons. They buy American weapons, and so America's intrusion is indirect. Now, these countries would normally have an absolute fit about America's intrusion. You know, Saudi Arabia won't allow American military bases on its soil anymore. But in this case, they'll take American weapons and give them to the rebels. The Syrian foreign minister, Walid al-Musallam, told foreign ministers that he had gathered, who had gathered for the long-delayed peace talks, that their nations could best help the situation by ending the funding of terrorism and of fundamentalism in Syria. Yeah, you want to solve the Syrian civil war, he said? Stop providing weapons to the Islamic jihadists. He said, then leave the Damascus government alone. He painted a graphic picture of terrorist rebel atrocities supported by Arab and Western states who back the opposition and who are present in the room. Yes, yesterday, there were pictures that were released that show that Assad may well have tortured up to 11,000 of those who sought to overthrow his government. Now, it is also true that that report was sponsored by and promoted by Qatar, a nation that cannot be trusted, a nation that is a partisan in the civil war, the nation most responsible for terrorists taking over Libya and for arming and abetting the Islamic Sunni Mujahideen that are fighting against the Assad government. But the atrocities that have been perpetrated by the jihadists are every bit as graphic. In fact, some are even more graphic. And that's what the Syrian foreign minister presented. He says, we have come here to put an end to terrorism and its bitter consequences, referring to the Islamic Sunni rebels fighting to unseat the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad. Diplomacy, he said, and terrorism cannot go in parallel. But that's how the world has been convoluted. We say we won't negotiate with terrorists. We won't capitulate to terrorists. And yet the United States wants to reward the terrorists in Israel with their own state. We are providing weapons to the Shia terrorists in Iran to kill the Sunni terrorists in Iran. And then we're arming the Sunni terrorists in Iraq and Syria to fight the Shia terrorists in Syria. Referring to the rebel atrocities, he said, in Syria, the wombs of pregnant women are cut open. Their fetuses are mutilated. Women are routinely raped. And they're not just raped alive. They're raped dead. Men are slaughtered in front of their children. All in the name of the revolution. Christians are beheaded. Islamists have emerged as the most powerful force on the rebel side, dampening Western appetite for direct intervention, and which is why we cowardly go behind the scenes and provide the weapons that are then funneled through Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and sparking conflict among the rebel formations. Iran and Hezbollah have helped Assad. The violence has spread. No kidding. When you arm both sides in a civil war, the violence spreads. The carnage increases. And the Assad regime correctly pointed the finger at the culprit, the United States of America. This next line is particularly troublesome. Secretary of State John Kerry, who called the Syrian president a killer unworthy of his office, reiterated the U.S. position that the only solution for ending the war is a new government. He said, we need reality. We need to deal with reality here. Bashar al-Assad will not be part of that transitional government, end quote. Think of that. You know, there's a old childhood line, the pot shouldn't call the kettle black. Probably 120,000 to 130,000 people that have died in the Syrian civil war. It's probably a fairly equal number on both sides. Let's just say 65,000 killed by the Syrian government. Now, let's assume that of that 65,000 have been killed by the Syrian government, that 10 to 15,000 of those were directly murdered by Assad, that they were enemy combatants, that the Assad regime said, you know, too much for us to imprison, way too much for us to control, we can't rehabilitate, we're going to find out as much as we can, information-wise, and we're going to kill them. All right. So let's say that's, that number is in the 10 to 15,000. How many people have died as a result of the United States over the last decade? The most accurate depiction of Afghani and Iraqi civilian deaths totals between 700,000 and a million. The United States has killed 5,000 people with its drones. The nation that is a killer whose politicians are unworthy for office is the United States. You know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, where many hundreds of thousands of people have died as a result of the U.S. invasions, we went in based on lies. We had no vital interest there. We weren't protecting our nation. We invaded those countries, and that's how many people died. Saddam Hussein was trying to rebuff an armed insurrection where the militants came from some 50 different Islamic countries, maybe as many as 80, and the weapons were supplied by external enemies, like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the United States. I mean, it isn't even remotely close. You know, defending one's government against an external armed insurrection that is supported by your external enemies, and America, based on a pile of lies, going in and invading two foreign countries. I mean, when you, Kerry, call the Syrian president a killer, unworthy of office, you need to look into the mirror. You need to consider the American drone program. You need to consider the consequence of America's invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. You need to consider the consequence of America's military support for the Mujahideen, the Sunni rebels in Libya. You need to consider the military support that you've provided Egypt. You need to consider the carnage even ongoing now in Iraq, with the United States providing the weapons that are killing both Sunni and Shia. We need to deal with reality here, Mr. Kerry, just as you said. It's too bad you don't. When it was his time to speak, Musalem, the Syrian representative, rebuked the U.S. diplomat directly. He says, no one, Mr. Kerry, has the right to give legitimacy or to withdraw legitimacy from a president, a government, a constitution, or a law, or anything in Syria except the Syrians. And yet the United States is trying to interfere with weapons, arming jihadists from around the world. So is Saudi Arabia. So is Qatar. Now, the Assad regime is not worthy of anyone's support. But you know the rebels from 50 to 80 Islamic countries that are trying to establish a Sunni dictatorship, not only in Syria, but throughout the Islamic world, so that they can launch World War III, destroying Israel and then making the rest of the world capitulate to Islam. They're not worthy of our support either. So why are we providing the weapons that are killing so many? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Larry on the line. Larry, this is an amazing turn of events. I would never have dreamed, prior to the research that you and I have done over the past 4 or 5 years, that it would be possible for the United States to be the great deceiver, for the United States to have become the merchant of death, for the United States to be on the wrong side of almost everything internationally, and to have regimes as vile as the Syrian or as corrupt as Putin in Russia, making more sense, being more moral than the United States. But it's happened.
It would have been hard to fathom, say, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But this particularly from the perspective.
Yeah, particularly from the perspective you and I bring to this, which is that we were both pro-military. We were both very patriotic. We were both extraordinarily engaged, you even more so than I, in the Republican Party.
I was Special Forces, and my son is Special Forces. So yeah, I was a flag waving, freedom loving, red-blooded American that would do his damnedest, you know, and yeah. I did.
Yeah, you actually are still freedom-loving, but you recognize the military is not, there's a negative relationship between freedom and our military.
Well, what I realize is that that's true, and our military is being used, if you will, like a red-headed stepchild.
Right.
You know, to enrich the elite that have a plan, and you know, we can take the tact that they're making mistake after mistake after mistake, or we can say this is intentional. And you make I don't know who thinks it's a mistake. I think it's just fully intentional. And well,
as it relates to our support of Islamic terrorists on both sides of the current civil war, and I'm not going to limit the civil war to Syria because it is a global civil war between Sunnis and Shia. Mm-hmm. And the United States is the primary supplier of weapons on both sides.
Isn't that the tact, though? Isn't that the same elite took in World War II? They funded Hitler and they funded Stalin. I mean, this is just a rerun. That's what it is.
Yeah, in fact, you mentioned World War II in that regard. And just before I go there, there is no chance in the world that the Obama administration does not know that it is supplying weapons, very sophisticated weapons, Apache gunships and Hellfire missiles, to the Iraqis government, which is a government that they know is controlled by the Shia mullahs in Tehran.
Yes, sure.
Giving them the means to kill Sunni militants in Iraq, while at the same time being the largest weapons supplier, indirectly, of course, through Qatar and Saudi Arabia, of the very same Sunnis they want hunted down with American weapons in Iraq, they're providing them with sophisticated weapons in Syria to attack a Iranian-backed regime. And so there is no way in the world that Kerry and the Obama administration don't know that what they're doing is grotesquely immoral and deadly, and that they have that the United States bears more blame than anyone else for the carnage. But now, if you even go back in World War II, that's something we have probably never spoken of in this program. But you've mentioned it, and while I am not a conspiracist, I avoid it like the plague. I am well aware that Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker, Prescott Bush had a son. He's George Walker Bush, and he had a son who was George Herbert Walker Bush, named after George Herbert Walker. That these two fellows formed a bank called Union Bank, and they formed an agreement with one of the largest industrialists in Germany, who was the principal manufacturer of steel in Germany prior to World War II. And that through this consortium of banking interests and manufacturing interests, that George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush are more responsible for funding the brown shirts, who became Hitler's private army, which enabled Hitler to gain power over Germany. Without George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush funding Hitler, he would never have been able to have his private army and would never have come to power in Germany, which means the Nazis would not have led the world into war. And then
it's all in the name of National Socialism.
Yes,
Socialism.
And then worse than that, even once he became empowered and he was slaughtering Europeans, George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush funded the manufacturing of German steel and the production, the synthetic production of German gasoline. And they bought the gasification rights to turn coal into fuel, and they then took control of the coal mines in places like Auschwitz, Poland, and then had Hitler on their behalf take control of Poland and use Jewish slaves to mine that coal to fuel the German war machine.
That's
and
right.
No one is more responsible for the German war machine than Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker.
Right, and we turned around and made two of them presidents.
The son of Prescott Bush and his grandson, based upon the fortune they made in World War II, aiding and abetting the enemy, made their fortune, and that's how they became effective in America's political arena. It is despicable what we do, and it is particularly sad that so few people care, that Republicans in particular go wave their flag and pretend that it's appropriate to support the military, that it's appropriate to be patriotic. It isn't. It just isn't. And it's time we deal with reality and recognize how corrupt our government has been and that it is not worthy of our support.
Well, no, it isn't. And you know, the Vatican also funded that. In fact, Hitler gave his three-finger oath to the Pope, the same one that the Swiss Guard gives. And it's the same three-fingered oath, by the way, that the SS gave to Hitler. The one thing he did wear is his Maltese cross everywhere.
You know, yeah, so. I mean, I'm an enemy of the Roman Catholic Church for lots of reasons. Their support of Hitler is low amongst those reasons. Clearly, they were a supporter of Hitler. Clearly, their most.
You know, the Jesuits called him their favorite son.
The Roman Catholic Church is despicable for lots of reasons.
Oh yeah,
their support of Adolf Hitler is low among them. Their support for pedophile priests, that's high among them. Their corruption of everything that Yahweh said, and the fact that they have led billions of souls astray, I'm going to put that the highest on the list. The fact that it is the most counterproductive institution in human history, I'll put that second on the list.
And yet at the same time, it's the wealthiest organization in the world. It really is.
Certainly.
They've got it.
May well be. I've tried to track down the finances of the Roman Catholic Church. In fact, there's a story that we'll get to probably next week because it's seven or eight down. I've got three major stories to report on Roman Catholicism after we finish the Syrian review, and then after we finish, I've got a report on suicides among America's troops, which is among the most troubling stories I will have ever presented on this program. And then following that, it was a very bad week for the Roman Catholic Church, and systematically over the next few days, we're going to go through these stories. I'm just going to highlight them now because we won't get to all of them. Roman Catholic Church was brought up before the United Nations because it's a signatory on the rights of the child, and for the first time has been brought up before the United Nations to be held accountable for the acts of pedophilia that have been perpetrated in the church's name over the past 100 years. And second to that, yesterday, the Roman Catholic Church agreed to settle the second, I think it's the third largest pedophilia case in America. The largest was in Boston. The second largest was in Los Angeles. Now this is the third largest. And with this, there was an agreement to release the American documents of the Roman Catholic Church in their cover-up. Not only protecting the pedophiles and deliberately interfering with justice, but also allowing the pedophiles to go to other places, providing cover for them so they would continue to abuse more children. The third story that appeared for the Roman Catholic Church this week is one of the leaders of the Vatican Bank has been accused and is about to be convicted of money laundering. And so it was a really bad week for the Roman Catholic Church, and we're going to get to those stories.
Yeah, and of course, I did not bring that up really to get into the Roman Catholic Church. I'm just saying that the same thing that we saw that prior to World War II, where the same people were funding both sides. I mean, this is what we're talking about in Syria. Well, not just Syria. We're talking about it, as you say, worldwide. You know.
Yeah. The reality is that the larger the political institution, the larger the religious institution, the more rotten they are. That does not mean small political institutions and small religious institutions are good. They aren't. But the wellspring from which they come, and the largest of them, are especially corrupt. And so if you are a Christian, for example, about 80% of your religion is still rooted in all of the corruptions of Roman Catholicism. And so, you know, there is no positive way to look at any of this. From religious malfeasance to political malfeasance, the world has become hellish. And it's getting worse with every breath, with every day, with every word politicians and religious clerics utter. And we ought to be very concerned. It's long past time that the citizens of the world educate themselves, develop a moral backbone, and start to oppose such institutions. I want to conclude this story. We've got Larry on the line, but the story is that the United States is participating in a United Nations conference to try to deal with the Sunni versus Shia conflict that is so brutal throughout the Islamic world, but particularly in Syria and in Iraq. The conference opened, of course, over diplomatic tension as to whether or not to include Iran. The United Nations asked Iran to attend because, after all, Iran is the single most influential part of this war. This war occurred because the United States gave Iraq to Iran. Iran then increased its influence throughout Iraq and into Syria and into Lebanon. And the increase of Shiite power was a major issue for the Sunnis. And so the Sunnis responded by creating this civil war in Syria. So to have a peace discussion, even any kind of discussion over the Syrian war, and exclude the most influential player speaks of the stupidity of the United Nations because after the United Nations did the right thing and invite them, the United States said, nope, 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 you can't invite them, disallow them. No, it's like trying to resolve a problem of pedophilia in the Roman Catholic Church in Chicago and saying the Vatican can't attend. You know, Fuhrer was a sobering reminder, even amongst the world powers that are sponsoring the peace conference, that no one can seem to agree with who is to engage and what the conference is to achieve. The Syrian factions are deeply divided, and the fact is that there is no united participation. This article even says that the rebels have been unable to either present an organized political alternative, which is absolutely true, to Assad, or to making a meaningful dent in Assad's superior military power. Also true. No matter how many weapons the United States, Europe, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar funnel to the Sunni Islamic jihadists in Syria, they're losing to this war. But Assad is now buoyed by steady military gains against the rebels. And he has made it clear that he isn't about to turn over power. If he were to, he'd be charged by war crimes. He'd spend the rest of his life defending himself against war crimes, living in prison, and then be murdered. What incentive is there for him to do that? And he also recognizes that if he does it, all of those that he's close to will be murdered because they're Shia in a Sunni regime.
Well, he knows that, and the powers know that. Everybody knows it. You know it.
Yeah.
You know that. Look, I look at the United Nations as an assembly of criminals gathered from various parts of the world,
including the United States participation. You know, for years I was as a patriot, I wanted the United States out of the UN. You know, U.S. out of UN.
Right.
But now I recognize that the United States isn't among the sane voices in the United Nations. We're every bit as corrupt, if not more corrupt, than any of the other participants.
We might even be doing a lot of the corrupting. You know, we are the power there because we're the funding.
Right.
I mean,
really. Yeah, and we've used our CIA for decades to undermine countries. I mean, the very fact that Iran is in such a mess today is because the United States decided to lead a coup. And we led not one coup, but two coups.
Of course, I know a lot about that because I know a lot of the people. You have to understand that they were young and all that, but it was led primarily by the British and MI5 and CIA. But what they did was use the universities and they used the communists. They're called Islamo-communists. There is such a thing. And the Islamo-communists that ran the universities got all the kids fired up for them. But you got to understand that what the Iranian people were embarrassed that, you know, they wanted to be like the U.S. They were embarrassed that they lived under a king. That was the whole catalyst for the thing, and they knew it. That's the game they played on them. You know?
We intervened in a place that we ought to have left alone, and we're responsible for creating the mess that has now led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. We need to walk away. We need to stop being the merchants of death. We'll return.